Fastamai, good evening and welcome to this week's episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, Bride and Ramsey commissioners weigh in on the rates reform debate and how it'll affect areas in the north of the island. Are tenants being given enough support before evictions? And a local politician questions whether the DEFA minister should have so much planning power. We start this week's agenda with a trip up north to discuss how changes to rates might affect two northern authorities.
I've just got out the car in Bride. It's a lovely sunny day, the birds are in full song. I can't see many people around. There's a man sat in a van at the car park that I just pulled into. He seems to be tucking into his lunch. But things could be about to affect this village if changes to local authority rates do come to fruition. I've come here to speak to a Bride commissioner about what the implications of changes to commercial rates might have on this village.
My name is Michelle Edwin. I'm one of the commissioners for Bride Parish.
Bride has one of the biggest percentages of commercial rates of any local authority in the island. Just so our listeners know, where do those commercial rates come from?
The biggest rate, the biggest section of all, is the quarry, which keeps changing its name. They are the huge part of the pie. Other than that, there are a few small businesses. There's the cafe up the road. There's the cook shack, which is a cookery training school. There's a lady who breeds Labradors, etc., etc.
Bride benefits from the quarry then, yes, and been able to keep its rates the lowest in the island, actually. Do you think, as commissioners, that situation is fair?
We benefit from it. There's no question about that. And we have a good relationship with the people who've run the quarry, and we always have. And we wouldn't like to see that changed. Their rates are based on the quarry rate, which is the same throughout the island, I understand. But, of course, any changes that we make affect them in huge proportions. But you've got to remember, in addition to them helping us in that way, their lorries, which are up and down the road, the mess, the changes to the land. Now, I'm not a native of Bride, but I've been on the commission with people who have been here for hundreds of years. And I think it's very sad for them to see what's happened to some of the land.
Do you think it's fair? Because I think that's what the government are trying to get at with their consultation, is that some places on the island, like Bride, other areas, do benefit from having commercial premises in their areas. And there are other rural areas without these commercial premises, and they have to pay much higher rates than Bride. Do you think that situation is a fair one?
Yes and no. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to that. We have the problems with it. Certainly in terms of the last tip, the landscape was supposed to be put back the way it had been. It certainly hasn't been. And we have to suffer that. As I say, it affects me personally less, but the people who have been born and bred here and grown up here were furious. And I think that they have a little compensation for the fact that the rates are lower. Mm. But again, this is a personal opinion. I think that it's also coincidence. You are where you choose to live. I choose to live in this village. It's a lovely village. It's a very pleasant place to be. But like everywhere else, there are swings and roundabouts.
If something were to happen that would change your collection of commercial rates in Bride, the big if, I suppose, how would that affect the commissioners? How would it affect the services you can provide, or the way you keep the rate quite low? How would it change that?
We've thought about this for a long time. There would have to be staged increases in the rate. And I think that that would be sad, because if you're asking us what we can do, okay, we have a playing field, we have a couple of churches, we have a toilet block, we used to have a school, we don't have one anymore, our businesses are small. This is an area where we don't even have a regular bus service anymore. I personally haven't used it. I think it's a good idea in theory, but whether it actually works in practice, I don't know. Bride is a lovely place, but you can't say it's totally full of amenities.
There had been a suggestion going round the rumour mill, I don't know how true it is, that if Bride did have to lose some of the commercial rates, they may have to put their rates up double or possibly even triple. Is that a gross exaggeration or quite true?
It's potentially true. The problem for us is that we've deliberately tried to keep the rates low because it's the single most important way we can act in the interest of the majority of the people. And ever since I've been on the commissioners, which is quite a number of years now, it's been our intention to spend as little as we need to and not to increase our demands on people if we can't. I mean, hopefully we can stay like that, but it's not going to. And if that happens, we will have to put the rates up. We haven't this year. There's been no increase for this year. But I think that this may be the last of the years where that will happen. But we would not wish to do it overnight. We wish to have a gradual increase in the rates. I hope it doesn't happen because, as I say, it's not an unmixed blessing. I think every area has their difficulties and every area has their things that are very nice about it. And we're no different from that.
The consultation is now closed. There seem to be mixed feedback, so the changes that do come forward might not even be affecting Bride, but are you concerned?
Well, I'll quote David Christian to you, because he said that this is just an attempt to grab commercial rates and let them be collected by an agency, and we don't even know what that agency will be. I think he's got a point. I don't often agree with him, but I do on this one.
Bride Commissioner Michelle Edwin. Well, Bride's neighbours, Ramsey Commissioners, will support changes to the way domestic rates are valued, with the chairman calling the current system outdated and absurd. Currently, the charge is based on the rental value of a domestic property half a century ago, but government has proposed a new method of assessment based on the size of your home. The chairman of Ramsey, Andy Cowie, believes this is a step towards a more equitable system, which will be easier to understand than the present one. The change of assessment method was put forward in that Cabinet Office consultation on the collection and distribution of both domestic and non-domestic rates. Well, under the proposal, properties would be given a rateable value based on the size in square metres of all the floors in a building, which should be calculated using aerial photographs. The Policy and Reform Minister, Chris Thomas, has said this is a cheaper way of addressing the out-of-date and unfair system than revaluing homes based on their capital values. That's thought to cost anywhere between £1 to £2 million. Well, a second concept outlined in the consultation, as we discussed earlier, was the possible introduction of a central body to collect all the island's business rates instead of local authorities. I asked Mr. Cowie what the rates makeup was in Ramsey.
We're about 80% domestic, 20% commercial, which is, there's a wide range of different factors within the local authorities and the Isle of Man, as you'd expect with so many authorities. But that's sort of fairly average in the middle, I think.
What kind of businesses are these? Have you got a good mix in Ramsey, or is there any particular ones boosting up that percentage?
I think there's a good mix. We've probably got more retail businesses contributing towards that figure than most places. Parliament Street is thriving. There's an awful lot of shops open and doing well, and that's adding to the mix. There are some industrial and light commercial premises within the town as well, which do go towards that commercial makeup.
And how much does it cost you as a commission? I'm not necessarily asking for a figure here, but is it substantial to service the commercial premises in your town? Do you have to provide some extras for businesses?
The only significant difference is the commercial waste, which is charged separately anyway. That's not included within the rate figure. It's, again, just providing what everybody needs. It's in a well-run town, good lighting, clean streets, and a nice environment to work and live in. And that's what we're aiming for in Ramsey, what we think we've achieved.
So you wouldn't say businesses cost you any more in terms of services than perhaps just a domestic payer?
Probably not, no. We need to drill down into the figures. Mm. And again, it depends very much on the size of business as well. You know, one massive office will obviously take up more resources than a small accountant's perhaps, or a small shop. So it's difficult to generalise on that.
Well, let's get into to the meat of the matter then. We'll start with commercial rates. I've been speaking to a Bride commissioner actually about this. There's a proposal that those commercial rates, instead of going to the local authority, they could go to this all-island agency. I think there's some detail to be meted out there. But on face value, what was the commissioner's reaction to that idea of possibly pooling commercial rates across the island?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Ewan. There's just not enough detail on how that might go together, and there was quite a bit of concern within the board as to how that might operate with the commercial rates, and we definitely need to have a lot more visibility of the detail behind that mechanism to decide whether it is acceptable or not to us.
On principle, do you think it would be fairer, though? I mean, that seems to be a phrase that's mentioned a lot in the consultation, is the question of fairness. There are some areas where the balance between commercial and domestic skewed heavily. So do you think perhaps that would be fairer?
The concept is certainly would be fairer. However, how that would be then distributed is where you could introduce a significant element of unfairness as well. For example, it could be all the money would be spent in Douglas on revitalising the main shopping area or the prom. So it's very important to see the detail of how that would be allocated. And I think the proposal, which seems to be just a bid for funds collected from the commercial rent for specific projects, is a little naive.
And is that fear over a lack of control of income a feeling that's shared by the board, I suppose, the feeling that you might not be able to guarantee a sort of control of that income?
Yeah, I mean, the commercial income in Ramsey is 20% of our overall rate income, so it's a significant chunk, and we try to spend all our income wisely and on the things that are the best for everybody in Ramsey, whether commercial or domestic ratepayers. And to lose 20% of that would definitely affect our budgeting process and what we do for the town.
Are there any opportunities, though, in the proposal? Could Ramsey perhaps be receiving a bigger share, potentially?
Again, it is also quite possible. We have some big plans to improve the town, and if we could access additional funding for that, that would be absolutely fantastic. However, as I said before, we really need to see the detail of that, what is being proposed, before we could possibly hope to agree or disagree with it.
Of course. Now, moving to the second issue in this, well, there's loads of issues, but one of the major ones that stuck out, the proposal for assessing a domestic property's rateable value using its area rather than its rental value. You've actually said in the responses of the board this might be a more equitable solution. Well, what is the board's view on this?
The board are very much behind a fairer system of rates allocation. As you say, when you read it out loud, the rental value of a property in 1969 or 71, whatever, it's just absurd, isn't it, in the modern times. The island has changed massively in the intervening period. And those rental values allocated on different types of property are just completely out of touch with reality. So the current system is clearly vastly unfair, and anything that can be done would probably improve on that situation. And the proposal to look at square footage is at least fair and understandable. It's quite a simple concept, and I think that's very important as well.
Some of the detractors from the square footage proposal have said we should have just a re-evaluation based on capital values. The board have chosen to support this. Why not the capital values, I suppose?
Well, the capital values, which was looked at in various guises previously, I understand, by government, it does have issues in that how do you set that capital value? And I think the big concern was to do that fairly. It would involve a huge team of valuers running around the island at the same time trying to assess everybody's property value individually. And again, there are arguments to be had about locations and specific values. You know, a type of house in a particular area might be worth considerably less than the same house in a different area, just based on area. So there's sort of hidden inequalities potentially within that valuation as well.
And are properties in Ramsey generally cheaper than properties across the rest of the island?
Yeah, I believe that's the case at the moment. It's a great place to live and good value as well.
With that in mind, how do you think area value would affect Ramsey? Does there tend to be larger properties? And what I'm trying to get at here is, if there was a capital evaluation, do you think you might actually see the cost of properties in terms of the rateable value going up in Ramsey? Because,
well, it very much depends what that figure's set at. All that's been defined in the consultation is the concept, I think, really. There's been no numbers attached to that. And again, it would have to be clear that there would be no overall gain or loss in the rates income to the board. It would just be allocated in a different manner. So there will clearly be some winners and some losers, I'm sure, depending how that valuation comes out.
And just finally, to round this off, had this consultation not have emerged, and I'd have asked you, as the chairman of Ramsey Commissioners, what the board's issues predominantly were with rates, what would you have said to me?
Well, primarily we're trying to get the best value for rates is our single biggest mission, and making sure we spend those rates wisely for the benefit of the town, to improve the town. The concept itself of the current rating system is, as I said before, it's clearly absurd.
Andy Carey, the chairman of Ramsey Commissioners. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The chair of Douglas Council's Housing Committee insists evicting tenants is always a last resort. Councillor Claire Wells says every effort is made to contact a person who is in rent arrears before legal action is taken, but as a housing provider, she says support can only extend so far. It comes after the plight of an evicted tenant who since passed away was highlighted in the Gry Gazette, a newsletter issued by the homelessness charity. The article, written by Gry founder Michael Manning, details the circumstances surrounding the eviction of council tenant Ross Ward. Though unable to comment on this specific case, Mrs. Wells outlined the process of eviction and what support is available. She says the vulnerability of tenants is taken into account by the council, and housing officers will direct those in need to social services. Mrs. Wells explained the eviction process to me.
There is a long process which happens, and it's a very rigid process. There are a number of letters which go out to the tenant first. If they've missed a payment, they will get a letter, they will get a phone call from a housing officer, and subsequent letters, they will also get a lawyer's letter, which will say, right, we still haven't heard from you, you're now in arrears. And officers will, during this time, try and contact the tenants to try and figure out what's going on and try and see if there's anything that we can do to assist them so that they can sort out their arrears, anything at all. There is a lot of work that goes into speaking with the tenant and trying to help them before we go down the process of taking them to court and evicting them, because it's not just a case of we turn up at the door and we say, right, you're in arrears, give me your keys and out you go. There is a legal process we have to go through, and it has to go through the courts for us to get an eviction notice. And at that point, that is when we would look at actually removing somebody from a property.
And if you can't get in touch with somebody throughout that process prior to going to court, are there any fail-safes? What other action can you take?
There's not an awful lot you can do. If you've tried to contact them with the contact details you have, you've gone to the property to try and contact them, you've sent them letters, I'm not entirely sure what else you can do, but those are all the things that you would do. So contact details that we have within the council, you would go to the property and try and speak to the person. Officers would try and phone them. All of the usual things that you would try and do to get in touch with somebody would happen before we go down the actual legal process, because at the end of the day, the legal process costs us money. We would like to avoid that as much as possible. You know, we would like to help people, make sure that we have done everything we can before we go down the process of the legal route.
Do you take the possible vulnerability of a tenant into consideration when you're going down this line?
Vulnerabilities are taken into consideration, but it needs to be remembered that we are not a social services. We will refer people, or we are in a position that we can contact social services if we feel that there is an issue, but it is not up to us to deal with somebody's social issues. At the end of the day, you know, we provide a tenancy, people, and we're a housing provider. That is our duty in society at the moment.
Considering that those who access social housing tend to be people who do need a bit of added support, do you take into account other factors when dealing with a tenant approaching issues like eviction? Do you take into account other factors other than the fact they may owe money in rent arrears?
I think we've got there's a line that's got to be drawn at some point, where you say, right, okay, this person is in need of assistance, and they are, social services are contacted and they deal with that. And that's where you have people who their rent is paid for by social services. Now, another thing which is probably quite important to remember is that just because social services are paying the rent doesn't mean the rent automatically goes to the council or indeed a private letting company. The money goes to the person, and that person is then responsible for paying the council or their privately rented property. That's how it works. It's not as if it goes straight to us or to whoever they're renting a property off and it gets paid. That can happen, but it is down to the choice of the tenant as to whether or not that happens.
Is there any support other than the efforts to contact the lawyer's letter, your own letters, offered prior to eviction by the council, or in lieu of that, any signposting to services that could help somebody facing eviction?
Officers are trained to help people in these situations, and they will make every effort to help a person who is in a difficult situation with regards to payments. Payments can be spread out, and if there is a plan put in place that the tenant sticks to repay any debt that is owed to the council, then we wouldn't go down the route of an eviction. But the key thing here is that that person has to keep up that agreement. So if you come up with an agreement that says you're going to pay an extra, I don't know, £5 a week or £10 a week, and that agreement is in place, and 2-3 months down the line, you're not paying the extra, then we have to go back down the route of looking at an eviction and trying to help people again. But there's only so many times that you can do that with somebody. There's only so many fixes that you can put in place. If the tenant is unable to or unwilling to keep up with that agreement, we don't really have a choice, because ultimately we are a housing provider. And if you're not paying for the housing that you're living in, what other choice do we have?
Once a tenant has been evicted, is that the end of your dealings with that person, or is there any support afterwards?
There is a small amount of support between the eviction notice and when they actually have to leave. And there are some cases where we have extended the dates for which they've had to leave the property in order to assist them to find somewhere else to live. So there are things like that, but we can only then help them again to get into a social housing house again once they have cleared the debt that they have with us. Hmm. Once they have cleared the debt with us, then they can go back onto the housing waiting list and be allocated a house again.
How long do people have to deal with arrears, and when is the point that you decide to take action on those?
The process starts straight away. So if somebody is a week in arrears, they will get a letter. It's not as if we wait for months on end. The process starts straight away, where you will get a letter say, right, you haven't paid last week's rent, so you're now in arrears. A phone call will then be made to the tenant to say, is there a problem? Can we help you with anything? So it is pretty much straight away. It's not something that is left for a very long time. Mm. We have got a very good record for rental income in the council, and it's something that we're very proud of, and it's something that we want to keep going. We have very few debtors that we have to write off. Mm. And if we have to write them off, a lot of work has gone in to try and get hold of the money before we go down that route.
The chair of Douglas Council's Housing Committee, Claire Wells. The head of Onchan Commissioners has questioned whether the Environment Minister should have the final say on planning appeals. Martin McFarlane doesn't believe one elected official should have enough power to overrule objections which are supported by independent inspectors. It comes after Onchan Commissioners appealed against plans by Housedrake Developments to build an 80-bed care home on King Edward Road. Onchan's objection was supported by an independent planning inspector, but then dismissed by the Environment Minister, Geoffrey Boot. I asked Mr McFarlane to explain why the board initially objected to the care home plans.
It's to do with the streetscape, for starters, and also the amenities, particularly like the transport for what they're trying to offer there. There's environmental aspects within that site as well. I believe there's some wildlife, which... those facts need to be taken into consideration, but particularly for my own personal view, the transportation is one big aspect. There's no bus route there for what they're trying to achieve.
And that's been an issue that's been raised, not just in relation to the care home, but in board meetings I've attended in Onchan, that traffic and transport has been an issue. Do you think that's a major part in this? Or certainly when you're looking at all planning applications, I suppose, when it comes to Onchan?
There needs to be a lot of consideration for any planning, particularly in Onchan, for the transport and the transport links, especially when we look around the developments that are going on up north, for instance. We have a lot of traffic coming through the village. So it needs to be a very careful consideration when it comes to any development as to what the potential impact is going to be. And you're right, traffic is one big point that we take into consideration.
So you lodged your appeal, and it actually had the support of the independent inspector, and then Minister Boot made his decision to go against it. You put out quite a strongly worded press release on this issue. Can you just explain the board's feeling towards this decision? It was quite disappointed, really, wasn't it?
It's very disappointing, considering the appeals inspector agreed with our argument As I said before, the strongest point being it's contrary to the Yonkin Local Plan 2000. So it's very disappointing when you have that backing of somebody who's supposed to be completely independent for a singular individual, being the minister, to be able to dismiss that argument entirely and go with his own viewpoint.
But do you feel that it should, that the minister maybe shouldn't be the ultimate decision maker then? I guess he put forward the argument that as an elected representative in the job of DEFA minister, that's his right to do that. Do you feel that that right should be rested in the hands of one person or one elected representative?
I don't think it should be one particular elective representative, whether it's Tim Mould or otherwise. We're supposed to live in a democracy, and particularly with this case that has gone through the motions of having the independent review this case, where it's been challenged, I don't think it's right that a single person should then have enough power to overrule that.
How about in the advancement of sort of trying to look at things with a national hat on rather than a local hat on? Because some may say, well, we do need care homes, and yes, Onchan does have a local plan, but if we're trying to look at the bigger picture, we sometimes have to overrule those local plans. So do you have any sympathy with that argument?
Well, the Onchan local plan is developed with Tim Mould. So such a decision like this, where they're going to overrule such plan, my personal view is perhaps it should be Tim Mould as a whole that sit on some form of board that makes a final decision where there is a national interest. And perhaps at that stage, it can come back to whoever it is who's lodged the appeal and have their valued input for them to make a more balanced judgment. But it's not a democracy with one person who can overrule.
Onchan Commissioners Chairman Martin McFarlane. Well, that's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week. You can listen again to this episode online as a podcast. But for now, Gurumayu, and have a good evening.